Welcome to Discoville, where we discuss both Star Trek Discovery and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth look at each of these shows and discover that both of them can coexist in today's fandom as they introduce us to fresh, new, and exciting stories, characters, galactic destinations, and so much more. I'm Norm, one of your shuttle podcasters here on Discoville, but you know I don't fly these missions solo. With me is my co-pilot extraordinaire and fellow co-host on Blood of Kings, the Highlander podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network, Kevin. I have reservations to the simulator, Reitzel. What's up, Kev?
I know I'm on time, and I would appreciate it if you would end on time, because I've got some stuff to get to. I've got a duel. So do you mind?
I mean, what's the point of making reservations? I mean, you know.
Exactly.
But someone who was early, who made her reservations, you were actually here on time, Haley. I appreciate that. She's been here, not necessarily here on Discoville, but she's been here with us on the Fandom Podcast Network. You've actually heard her a couple times on Culture Class's special spotlights on Orphan Black, and we are glad to have her here in the tactical chair on Discoville. Welcome, my lovely Sestra, Haley Stoddard. How are you, Haley?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And I was early, but that's me.
That's because you made reservations to the simulator.
Yeah, I did.
Does that mean they only have one simulator on the ship? Like, what, you know, I guess.
But it's huge.
Yeah,
it is. It's an impressive set. Because if you look at the holodecks, they're actually kind of small on Star Trek, you know, next gen, but that simulator room's pretty big.
That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, how big does a hologram or a holodeck need to be? Right? Don't they keep like you in place with force fields and stuff and the environment moves around you?
Something like that. I thought that though too. I was like, wait, why do they only have one? This doesn't make any sense.
It's very
well, it is a mid-level exploratory vessel, so
That's true. Maybe on the Olympia, you know, which is like the great, great, great big ship, like
they probably
galaxy
got,
class.
They probably style. Got Maybe four have... simulator rooms.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So again, very fun techno-babbly stuff. And before we dive into the Orville, because we have a lot of stuff to get to here, Kev, I'd love for you to open up a hailing frequencies and let everyone know where they can find us across the Fandom Podcast Network's subspace channels.
I'd be pleased to. You can always find Discoville on the subspace channels. You can find the master feed of all of the shows of Discoville and our other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network on fpnet.podbean.com. You can also find us on the Podbean app. Fandom Podcast Network shows can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play for your Android users. On Twitter, we are at DiscovillePod. And also, the Fandom Podcast Network is on Instagram. On Facebook, you can also find the Fandom Podcast Network there. But we also have a great closed group, Discoville Facebook page. So if you are a fan of this and you're listening, please join our Discoville Facebook group because we got some great fans on there talking all Star Trek Discovery and Orville, and we'd love to get you on there. So make sure you do that. Give it a shot. If you'd like to contact directly, you can hail us through email at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com or here directly at Discoville at discovillepodcast@gmail.com. I'm Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Norman, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
Awesome. And Haley, where can we find you on Twitter?
People go on Twitter. People can find me. I am Trekkie01D.
Awesome. Now, we want to remind our listeners here that we have a partnership with TeePublic, the online awesome t-shirt store there. You can also help support the Fandom Podcast Network while you're wearing your favorite show's logo with pride. Visit teepublic.com and search Fandom Podcast Network, where you can also find a really, really cool Discoville logo that you can put on anything that they can provide, and anything that you purchase on that store through the Fandom Podcast Network link there, you help us out as well. Please leave a review on iTunes so new fans can find us easier. Please search for the Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes. We love 5-star reviews. And if you're a Discoville listener, please leave a specific review targeting Discoville, and we will read it on one future episode.
Oh, thank you very much for that, Kevin. And one last note, it is holiday season. So if you're looking for that very special something that, you know, not everyone can find, and you're a fan of the Fandom Podcast Network or know somebody who wants to wear something very cool, that's where you find unique stuff, right? You just can't find these.
I'm glad you said that, Norm, because there probably will be a Black Friday weekend sale on the TeePublic site. I think all shirts will be like $14, which is a really good deal. Yeah. So make sure you go on there, search Fandom Podcast Network, and get some great shirts at a good price.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So diving now into the episode, the title for this episode, I think, is kind of fun. Out of the frying pan and into the firestorm, because literally it's kind of like the old proverb that fits both of these episodes. We try and find that galactic tie between these two shows that happens sometimes more than others. But at the end of Into the Woods, which was the last episode on Star Trek Discovery, they literally like jumped out of the frying pan. The spore drive jumped them into some weird, I don't know where they are. There are a lot of theories about that, and we'll jump into that in a little bit. But into the firestorm of the Orville, where Alara literally had to come face to face with the fire of her fears and her worst nightmares. So this is the time in Discoville where we go off duty. We unzip our uniform jackets, and we head into the officer's lounge. So I have a little bit of a course correction to make here, Kev. Now, usually, we usually jump into episode reviews.
Right.
But I think that Stamets is going to let me kind of like plug into the spore drive because we're not episoding reviewing anymore from now until the beginning of January, January 8th, because there's no more new episodes of Discovery.
Yeah, we got to wait. Got to wait.
So we're going to take a different tack this week. Since we have Haley on here and Haley's watched all the shows, we're going to talk about a little bit of our journey, our discovering Discovery. And Discovery premiered on September 24th, you know, just a few months ago, to the CBS and CBS All Access pay network. The first part was free, the Vulcan Hello, and the second part, A Battle of the Binary Stars, was part of the paywall. So before we jump into a little bit of that, what were you both expecting? Haley, I'd like to start with you first, but what were you expecting from something like a CBS All Access? What were you envisioning this was going to mean to you for Star Trek?
Being able to watch it. I don't think, you know, a lot of people are complaining about it, but, you know, I don't have television, so I've been paying for every episode, basically, and it wasn't a big deal to me to stream it, to pay for another streaming service. So as a
Star Trek fan,
yeah,
it wasn't even like a blip of a choice. You were like, I'm going to watch Star Trek, I'm going to make the sacrifice, I'm going to put it in my budget, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah, well, and I look at it as, you know, I'm able to watch everything else on CBS All Access because I cut the cord, not willingly. I want to have actual television, but so it was nice because now I have access to everything else that's on there. So it was like, okay, I'm going to pay $6 for Star Trek, but I'm paying $6 for everything else. So it wasn't a big deal.
No, that's a fair point to say. What about you, Kevin? Because we've talked about this a bit. We were a little worried that, you know, it was just going to be, it's a weird dynamic for CBS. It was something new to the Star Trek fans.
I dove head first, but I did it at the last minute. I was deciding whether or not to do like, was it $6 with commercials or $10 without, whether or not to do it episode by episode or full season. And I started looking at what CBS Online had to offer and a lot of the other backlog of shows and old shows that CBS had, including, you know, MacGyver and a bunch of other cool stuff, you know. So what I did was I decided to pay for the whole year, just straight up front. I dove straight into it and without commercials, and I'm kind of glad I've done that. Plus, I'll be honest, one of the selling points for me was getting After Trek. Okay. In addition to the regular Discovery TV show, having After Trek hosted by Matt Myra, which I'm a fan of way back from his appearances on Attack of the Show and his stand-up comedy, I was like, you know what? I like this. I'm going to get more programming for this, and this is going to be totally worth it.
Okay, that's actually a really good point, and I didn't put this in the notes because I don't watch a lot of the After Trek. I will eventually.
Oh, you totally should, dude. They get some great interviews.
Yeah, I've seen some really cool snippets, you know, online and on social media. But for the both of you, Haley, let's go with you first. Do you find value in the After Trek?
I've only watched a couple of the After Trek episodes, mostly just because I'm lucky I even watch Discovery once a week, as it was anyway. So, but being able to go back and watch it, because I'm keeping the service every month, I'm going to probably go back and watch all of it too.
Have you like the after shows, you know, like the, what is it, the Talking Dead and things like that?
Yeah.
So that falls kind of part and parcel with that kind of dynamic?
Yeah, it does. But, and they really get the guests on there, you know, they, and if they don't get them in person, they'll have them Skyping in and stuff like that, which is great, including, you know, maybe the character that I highlighted on the episode. They always have the writers, the creators on there. And they, of course, they do a great job of showing some behind the scenes, some production value. They even show some fan art in between, which would be the normal commercial breaks. It'd show some really cool stuff. So that was fun to watch. And I enjoy, you know, whenever we get together and do the Discoville here, I always make sure I watch that because it gives me a little bit extra information that I may not have noticed. And also they may mention something on that show that I may have missed watching the actual episode. So thank God for that.
Well, it's nice to be able to go back when you have a subscription and I guess binge watch certain things like, you know, a group of shows or, you know, the entirety of all the After Treks, which I actually have to get to. But the neat thing about what happened with Discovery when it was finally announced is that we stopped that dry sea of no Star Trek, the 12-year drought from May 2005, the end of Enterprise in its fourth season, to now. And there were so many different, I guess, fandom speculations on what this was going to be. I remember, Kaylee, you and I had this conversation at Star Trek 50 and in Las Vegas about when Brian Fuller announced that Discovery was coming, but he wasn't there, but he was there, was very quick. And then I think it was actually you and me and our friends over at Trek Geeks, Bill and Dan, it felt like it was kind of like an afterthought that they mentioned it. And it was kind of troubling that there was the Brian Fuller production, and then there was kind of trouble there, and then there was all this kind of turmoil, this, that, and the other thing. It felt like it wasn't actually getting its legs, but then it did, and then everything was okay. Then it premiered. But what were you thinking in this whole period? Like, what did you want Discovery to be for you?
I tried not to go into the show with any expectations, actually. I wanted to not know as much as other people. I'm not one of those people that I'm like, I have to know everything that's going on, and I want to hear about everything, and I want to read every article that comes out. For me, I just wanted the characters. I wanted characters and stories that kind of fit into what we already know of the Trek universe. That's what my biggest expectation was going into Discovery. I just wanted those characters and those stories. So, yeah.
And Kev, I mean, you and I have been Star Trek fans for a long time, and it's one of the things we always want to do for this network is actually start talking Star Trek, because that's in our DNA. You know, that's in our wheelhouse. And it was irresponsible of us not to have Star Trek in the offerings here. So I'm not exactly sure if we had long conversations about our personal feelings for Discovery coming up. What did you want? Because you were there with Decipher. You were there when the Next Generation Deep Space Nine Voyager was kind of like the forefront, especially with gaming.
Right.
But then there was this undiscovered area of Star Trek where nothing happened. I mean, like, except for, say, the J.J. Abrams movies, you know, 2009 to 2013. But there was nothing on TV. So were you building up fan expectation, or were you being kind of emotionally cautious to protect yourself from any kind of letdown?
Both, actually. You know, as you mentioned, I used to work for Decipher that had the license for the Star Trek trading card game, and it covered the original series all the way up through Enterprise. And, of course, with Next Generation being my main Star Trek, we covered that extensively there, and I love the world building that the creative forces did all the way up through the end of Voyager, and it was nice with Enterprise to kind of go back and kind of set the Federation and see how things were going. And when, you know, I remember like 3 or 4 years before this, before Discovery was announced, I was jonesing for new Star Trek, man. I was like, why is there not new Star Trek? What is going on here? And I was getting frustrated that this wasn't happening. No one was getting the ball, you know, rolling here. And then when they announced that there was going to be a new production, I was just like, man, I really, really hope that they do something in the future. I'd love to see what happens after, you know, Voyager and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, be able to bring back a lot of those characters from those three series, Voyager, DS9, and TNG. And you know, just because, you know, we had the Abrams movies that went back in time as well and did, you know, the original series take on it. So when they announced that it was going to take place during this time, I was very apprehensive because I wasn't ready for it. It's not what I wanted. But being a Star Trek fan, I knew I was going to embrace it one way or another because it is. It's what I do, you know, just like I do with Star Wars and my other fandoms. You know, when there's a new material coming out for it, I will embrace it. Maybe it's not my favorite. Maybe it is, you know, but, you know, to answer your question, it was both.
Well, I do remember those conversations that we had that you wanted to go past Voyager. And I think that when fans heard that it was going to be set 10 years before Kirk takes command of the Enterprise, and not necessarily 10 years before Kirk is born, because there's a huge distinction there, because we saw that happen with the battle between the Narada and the Kelvin in the 2009 Abrams when Kirk was, when the timeline was changed and the new Kirk was born. But it's going backwards again. You know, we had that with Enterprise. And then that was going, you know, prior to the original series. And now we're going prior to the original series again. I'm wondering, in some ways, did it not offer them the flexibility of being able to tell the kind of stories that they wanted to tell? Or are we going to see, this is a rhetorical question, are we going to see the kind of story that needs to be told for this specific time period? Because you're right, we've gone to the well so many times in the past. In the last 15 years, we've done Enterprise, we've done the J.J. Abrams universe, and now this, all within the same prequel-esque 100 to 150 years. So hopefully they can pull out that storyline. We'll see. So far, so good, I think. But why do you think that you like seeing it past Voyager? Because we spent a lot of time in that timeline also between Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. It all took place in the same 24th century era.
I just want to mention, because that's new territory that has yet to be explored. There's so much that's been left out there, you know, the ramifications from the Dominion War, what happens with Voyager and their experiences and how that's affect the Federation. Because the Federation really wasn't in a great place after the end of Deep Space Nine, you know, it didn't get touched on much, obviously, in Voyager. And I just wanted to... Star Trek's about the future and moving forward. And that's what I wanted to see in that. And I'm hoping one day they will explore that. But I think that coming back and kind of filling in all of this stuff before the original series, especially with the whole Klingon conflict, I think was one of the cool things that really kind of drew me in. And if you don't mind, I actually like to throw a question out there that I think that we should address since we are talking about it, and I can wait to do it till, you know, Haley can answer the next question. But I wanted to ask a question of both of you guys about the Klingon thing.
Well, that's up to Haley. So
Haley,
I was just gonna say I agree with Kyle or with Kevin. You know, I kind of my biggest hope was that it was going to be after Voyager, or I would have liked to have seen something between TOS and TNG, because there's that span in there. And so, yeah, I was kind of like, really, we're going back before TOS again? And I appreciate what they've done. They've told some really great stories, and I think, you know, understanding that dynamic with the Klingons has been really fun. But yeah, I wanted something later, for sure. But go ahead and ask your question.
What's your big question, Kev?
I want to ask you guys something. One of the biggest, I think, issues that a lot of fans had with Discovery was the look of the Klingons, and it turned a lot of people off. My personal opinion was I was a little like, huh, okay. But as I started watching the show, I have no problems with it. I've grown accustomed to this particular look of the Klingons and this series kind of take on them. I don't know if they're going to try and explain why these guys look different to where then later on things change, or if they're just going to say, no, this is Discovery's interpretation of Klingons. I personally am fine with it. I love the look. I've gotten used to it, and I think it's great. And I wanted to ask you guys, how did it take you a while to get used to it? Were you fine with it straight up? Or are you still not fine with it? Haley.
I was fine with it. You know, I get that people who are, you know, they identify maybe as Klingon would be upset with them changing the way they look again. And they get the argument of, oh, they look like JJ Klingons and not, you know, Klingons in actual Star Trek, because we don't think JJ's movies are Star Trek. I had no problem with it. Being able to see a lot of the stuff when I was in Vegas this year was really amazing. So I had no issue with how they look. And I think they'll probably explore why they made them look the way they did at some point.
What about you, Norm?
I didn't actually have any issue with the Klingons or really any of the designs, because sometimes as Star Trek fans, we have to step back and take a look at what they're presenting for new viewers. Because we know Star Trek. I'm an original series fan. My favorite Klingon of all time is Commander Kor. You know, he's from the Errand of Mercy. You know, that was John Colicos. That was my Klingon, and he will always be my favorite Klingon. But at the same time, I have to believe that we are moving into a completely different aesthetical universe where this, in my opinion, is where the original series is going to evolve into. What I mean is that it's not going to evolve into in much great respect to Matt Jeffries and to Hua Chang and everyone who did the production design on the original series. I think that Discovery is the aesthetic look that the future is supposed to look like in this universe. And it's eventually going to get to the multicolored uniforms and all that, but not out of velour and not out of all of these 1960s Jetsony ton of materials. It's an evolution of what we should believe the highest level of technology should be able to provide 150 years from now, right? So who's not to say that this is the way it's supposed to look? Because that's just another artist's interpretation of the future. And it doesn't necessarily have to fit exactly the same every single time.
Yeah, good point.
So. Well, and I've always argued, you know, that Trek is not made for just one person. It's not made for just me. It's not made for just Norm. It's not made for just Kevin. So it has to encompass things that everybody can agree on or mostly agree on. And it's not made for just one fan. And I think that fans tend to forget that it's not made just for them. It's made for all of us, and it's made for anybody else who comes into the fandom and comes into Trek. And so they have to, the writers aren't catering to just one person, and the production's not made for just one person. It's not just your Trek. And I think a lot of fans tend to forget that it's not just theirs.
Yeah, well, that happens in fandom, especially in one that has so many different splinters in the audience. They kind of mm-hmm. silo around the series that they like. But, and that's a great topic for another conversation, because we have so many different audiences that, again, Discovery is trying to win over. But at least for this first half of this season, which is going to be, I believe, 15 episodes long, we have 9 episodes right now. We have the Vulcan Hello and the Battle of the Binary Stars. That was our kind of like 2-part premiere, which was amazing. Context is for Kings. The Butcher's Knife cares not for the Lamb's Cry. And Choose Your Pain, which I do believe that was the first Harry Mudd episode, which introduced the two, Rainn Wilson as Harry Mudd. Then we had Lethe. And then we had Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which was Harry Mudd's next episode. And then Kevin's favorite episode, because he loves pronouncing this title, Sivis Pacem Parabellum. And episode 9, the finale for the first part of this, Into the Forest I Go. Now, I think I'm going to throw a little bit of a wrinkle here because we are going to do a little bit of a Spore Drive roundup. Known as Kevin and I are familiar with this, is called the Desert Island Scenario. But I'm using the Spore Drive to round this up, because we're kind of like popping around. It's not going to be 133 questions, but somewhere around at least maybe 4 or 5. So if everyone's not, if everyone knows or doesn't know what a desert island scenario is, it's just kind of like you're on a desert island. You can only pick one thing to bring on with you on this desert island, and you're stranded there. And for our giggles for this part of the conversation, let's go with our very first desert island scenario question. I'm going to spore drive, jump to favorite episode and why. Kevin, let's start with you.
Oh, I had a little tough decision between two here. And that is Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And of course, the little mid-season summer finale there, Into the Forest I Go. Into the Forest I Go was pretty much a near perfect episode, and highlighted Michael Burnham really well, and some really cool action and great dialogue. But I think when it comes to Harry Mudd, I think he shined the best in Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And I just, that one was, I think, the funniest one too, especially when he killed Lorca like 30 something different times and you got to see that. And I just, Rainn Wilson as the guest star of Hardcourt, you know, Fenton Mudd there. He was perfect. And so I go between those two. If I had to pick one, maybe Into the Forest I Go, just because it was a really well balanced episode, and that's the one that I would choose next to Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
How about you, Haley? What are your choices?
My favorite episode was Choose Your Pain. Okay. I really loved how it explored a lot of more of what Lorca is. He's not my favorite character. I'm not a big Lorca fan, but I appreciated kind of seeing his, what's kind of driving him, or what we think is driving him, and his delusions kind of about himself. Yeah.
So if he's not your favorite character, who is your favorite character?
Oh, I'm Cadet Tilly all the way. Team Cadet Tilly.
How about you, Kevin? Who's your favorite character?
Yeah, Tilly is so darn good. She is so funny. I love the way she was introduced. She's just really, really well played by Mary Wiseman. But I do have to give a shout out, though, to Ash Tyler. Just because of the mystery surrounding him and the circumstances that he was introduced, and also being the person to kind of help Michael Burnham open up more her humanity side. Because let's put it, she's been bearing that her humanity with her Vulcan, you know, upbringing, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see a little romance going there as well. So, but yeah, Tilly's my favorite, and then Ash is a close second.
Yeah, Tilly, I'm Team Tilly also. I have to admit it, because, and it's going to be interesting. It would be interesting to speculate what the show would be like without her, because she brings a lot of soul. She brings a lot of heart. She brings a lot of levity. She brings everything that I think the show needs. She's kind of like the Swiss Army knife of characters, because she adapts to what she needs to adapt to. And I think she plays it brilliant. I mean, she's brilliant. My favorite episode so far, I think it's Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, because it's kind of like an encapsulated episode. So it just does its own thing. It's kind of like, it can be pulled out of the Discovery universe, but it works independently and with the Discovery universe at the same time for me. And I just love the opening scene. I love the disco scene. I just do. I love seeing the crew with letting their hair down and having fun and enjoying themselves as a crew. You rarely get to see that in Star Trek or any science fiction, really. So one last thing here. If you were Harry Mudd, what would you want to steal from Discovery? What would it be? You can only steal one thing. What would you steal from the ship, Haley?
What would I steal from the ship? Oh, yeah. Man. That's a hard one. I would steal the fortune cookie bowl.
Just the bowl?
Well, with the fortune cookies in it.
Okay.
Maybe wrap them all up and package them up individually so that they don't go stale. I don't know.
What about you, Kev? What would you steal from the
Discovery? I would steal everything out of Lorca's office. Everything.
One thing. It's like the Omega 13. You can only
choose
one.
Can I just steal
thing.
His whole office? Like, you know, like, can I just transport it? Oh, man. You know what? How about that? How about I'd steal that Gorn skull and just wear it around? That's what I would do.
That is a solid choice. That is a solid choice.
That's what I would do. Kind of like the Kurgan helmet. I would just put it on the head, you know.
Podcast with a Gorn skull on your head.
Exactly. That's what I would do. Because that would be a great conversation piece at the party. There you go.
Is that a Gorn skull? You too?
Oh, why, yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, I have an interesting story how I got it.
Ooh, let's talk about that. Meet me by the punch bowl later. Yeah. Lastly, for me, I would probably steal like everything in the armory because I have to have that phaser rifle, I have to have that phaser, and I have to have the communicator. I have to have them. By hook or by crook, those are going to be mine someday.
Yeah.
Maybe a organ sale somewhere in the black market. I don't know. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. I am. Well, as much as we love talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Wait, hold on. What about favorite moment? We didn't have to talk about favorite moment.
Oh, that's right. We do have a favorite moment.
Favorite moment.
Okay, ladies first. Favorite moment on Star Trek Discovery so far in these nine episodes. Yeah.
So far, definitely that end scene in Lethe between Tyler and Burnham. Where she, you know, she was struggling with those conflicting emotions, and that for me, it was very much that fight between logic and emotions, your head, your heart, you know, her Vulcan part, even though she's not Vulcan, but just that upbringing, that was beautiful. And I relate to that so stinking much that really hit for me. Yeah.
Howdy, Kev.
Oh man, there's so much to choose from, especially from the Harry Mudd episodes. But I really, because I'm a big fan of the Klingon episodes from TNG and the Klingon war that went through DS9. So I love Klingons, and I love the scene in the last episode, Into the Forest I Go, where Burnham just totally plays up on Cole's, you know, ferocity as a Klingon warrior, and just plays into his, you know, if you want to say he has honor, and challenges him to a fight. I love that. And then how she did the whole thing where she was able to grab the communicator off of him while she's diving in, and then she gets transported away. Loved that fight. I thought it was well choreographed too, well acted, and just how she just kind of, she has this amazing power of suggestion with Klingons. And I thought that was great.
I love that scene too. And I think it's because she knows how to play their game, or she knows how to manipulate their game. I think my choice was, I was struggling with this a little bit because there's a choice that speaks to me from an aesthetic standpoint. And there's a choice that speaks to me from, I'm watching history standpoint. And as an original series fan, there was the kiss. There was the kiss between Uhura and Kirk. They tout that as the first interracial kiss on TV, but there are debates about that. And it wasn't a consensual kiss. You know, it was under duress, you know, in that episode. So my choice was the kiss between Stamets and Culber. The reason why is because it was consensual. And there was a moment where they thought that they may not come out of this alive, or one of them wouldn't. And it was two people in the moment understanding that duty is coming first before themselves. So it shows you they are committed to their relationship, but they are also committed to the mission. And it was the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. That's always kind of like a mantra that I put on top of Star Trek. So the needs of the many are the ship and the Federation versus the needs of the few, Culbert and Stamets, or the one, Stamets himself. So I felt that the writers knew how to interject this particular relationship in a storyline that should be as natural in a relationship in a storyline for Star Trek fans to see in a series. And I applaud them for doing that. And I applaud Anthony Rapp his performance in this episode in Into the Woods I Go was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So
great scene. Yes,
thank you for for reminding us of the favorite moment, or else I wouldn't have had a chance to, or we wouldn't have had a chance to express those particular sentiments. But
I was waiting on mine, so I knew you had one.
And we can go. I mean, that's the thing. This discovery is giving us so much great content to talk about, but we got to switch gears here a little bit and, well, maybe hit the spore drive one more time, because you never really know what happens when you hit the spore drive one more time for one more jump. Just one more jump, Captain? Just one more jump. So here we go. Hit the spore drive and let's see what happens, because it's time to see what is going on with the Orville. So we're finally in the double digits here on the Orville. Episode 10, Firestorm. As the Orville forces its way through a violent plasma storm, Main Engineering is severely hit by an explosive plasma charge and Lieutenant Harrison Payne is pinned under a fallen bulkhead. The only crewman with the strength capable enough of lifting it is Lieutenant Alara, who immediately rushes to engineering, only to be paralyzed with fear by a wall of fire separating her from Lieutenant Payne, which prevented her from being able to save him. Racked with guilt over his death, Alara is struggling to make sense of her role on the Orville because she feels that she no longer has the capacity to serve as chief of security on the Orville or any other ship in the Planetary Union. Considering resigning her commission, Alara is suddenly attacked by a runaway clown as both she and the command crew of the Orville begin experiencing strange phenomena on the ship that can only be described as what would one suffer from their worst fears. So this is going to be a lot of fun because this was an extremely wacky episode. And let's open up the group discussion where we profile a specific character, idea, event, or element that stood out in these episodes. Sorry, I got flustered on this because I'm almost laughing my head off just even thinking about it. Kev, let's start with you.
Just a reminder, too, this is going to be a spoiler-heavy discussion.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Thank you very much. So, spoiler away.
Me?
Sure.
I mean, I could wait. That's totally fine.
No,
guests first.
You're in the tactical chair. You get to fire first.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So I will admit this probably was the third episode I've watched fully through, just so you know. But I really appreciated Lieutenant Alara, the steps that she took come the end of the episode, which you find out, to overcome not only her fear, but the strength of character that she had to say, I want to experience other people's fears and I want to come overcome those as well, so that she wouldn't be paralyzed by her fear or anybody else's. I thought that was really commendable. Freaking hated the clown. I hated the clown thing. Not gonna lie.
Which one? The hobo clown or the scary it clown?
Oh God! No clowns. No
hobo clowns are dangerous because they're
hungry. This has not been a good year for clowns.
Jeez, no clowns. No. Yeah.
What about you, Kev? What was your favorite moment or something that really stood out to you in this episode?
I have two things I want to mention. First of all, Seth MacFarlane is the captain. This is the first time I think we've really seen Seth kind of capture the role as the captain, as the person in charge. And I think he did it wonderfully, especially when he's, you know, talking to Alara about the first time that he met her and how he was apprehensive and how now he has, you know, all the confidence in the world. And then little things like calling out, well, if this is what happened, this is what happened, then there's got to be something wrong with us, where he's kind of bringing everyone, you know, to the reality of what is going on and realizing what we need to do next and the next direction. And I'm glad that he's finally putting himself into a situation where he is the commander. And the one thing that I do want to see him do more of, and we've touched on it a little bit, is I want to see him do some diplomacy. Mm-hmm. And he's done a little bit of that, but I really, you know, when it comes to diplomacy, I think we can all say Captain Picard has probably really is at the top of the ladder when it comes to that. And I would love to see Mercer do a little bit more of that as well. But as for taking command of the crew in this episode, I thought it was fantastic to see that. And I got to tell you, the other highlight of this episode that cannot go unnoticed, that we need to talk about, is the production value, the sets. We got to see a lot of different sets and the hallways used in really cool ways. Just really, really good production design. I absolutely loved it with the props, the guns, everything. And then can we get a shout out to these costumes again, Norm? I know that there's a, you know, we also are on this, like, this Orville costume Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. And you've put up some really cool stuff, especially regarding Claire's smock that she wears. Mm-hmm. And how cool that looks. Just beautiful, beautiful costume design.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I'm going to kind of like tack that onto what I wanted to talk about, because the opening sequence was about as good of an opening sequence on a science fiction show that I've actually ever seen. It had a lot of great production value. The visual effects were on point. The tension was there. There wasn't really like levity in terms of comedy per se, but that comes later on when you're trying to break the tension of the narrative. But what Alara had to go through with, okay, I can do this. Everyone knows that she can open up a jar of pickles. That's her thing. You know, she can like slam through doors or tear metal into pieces. That's what she does. But you're actually genuinely given a very serious issue that she had to deal with. And that was some type of post-traumatic stress. She didn't know where it came from. And it ended up in the death of a crewman. That's heavy stuff. Even for a dramatic comedy or a dramedy, as they're trying to pigeonhole this, when I don't think it's fair to the Orville to pigeonhole it either way. So the production, the visual effects, the costumes, I know that you kind of got giddy on this, Kev. I know I did. Is when they opened up those lockers in the hallways with the phasers and the assault rifles.
Oh, man. Where's my phaser rifle prop, man? I want that.
Click, just open up a locker and it's there. So many great things that happened in this episode. And I think it actually got a lot of really good buzz across social media. But let's kind of fire up the quantum drive here and talk about a couple of really cool things that also happened here. And Haley, this kind of plays into what you were talking about. I'd like to give our very first Discoville commendation to Halston Sage, the actress who plays Lieutenant Alara Catan, because she could have been written in as just another pretty face. I mean, let's face it, you know, she's gorgeous. You know, she has that it look. But she's so much more to the show than that. And I'm glad that they kind of went in a way where they're developing her character with responsibilities, you know, with consequences, because it's not the first time she had to face consequences of her actions. You know, she did that early on in episode 2, where she didn't know how to take command. So I'm glad they wrote her in a way where she is actually continuing to develop under Captain Mercer, who's also continuing to develop as he's advising her. Do you feel that that's happening with this character? Do you think that she's being given that kind of really good credit?
Me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's nice to see. I think we're getting more stronger female characters and better written female characters now in television than we were in the past. You know, you look at how, you know, my favorite series, TNG, was written, and you look at Troy and Dr. Crusher, and there are just some episodes you're like, wow, really? You know, they could have done so much better with that. It's kind of nice to see that, you know, women don't have to be just that pretty face anymore on television. And I think that's great. I think, you know, it's nice. It's really, really is, because I think we're getting a broader range of what women really truly are in the actual world, but on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And what's interesting too is that it was nice, because within these first 10 episodes, I think it is, she's been highlighted in 2. And after I watched this episode, I actually went back and watched Command Performance, where she's thrown into command for the first time. And it was also nice that she got her eyebrows in that episode, because I was watching the pilot. It was weird not seeing those. But, by the way, I also went and purchased the entire season of Orville on iTunes. I haven't done that before on iTunes, but I was like, I got to have Orville. I got to have it now. Mm-hmm. I don't want to rely on my DVR. I want it on iTunes, so I have it wherever I go. And Alara definitely deserves that award. Discoville commendation, definitely. Her character is, it's just, she's the glue of that cast right now. You know, I mean, she's seen so much stuff, so much crap, And I love that we're getting a little more backstory on her parents as well.
Well, let's jump into that, because that was it's so funny, because Seth MacFarlane, for some odd reason, likes being able to throw kind of that weird, awkward parental dynamic in there. And it was funny seeing, well, first of all, it was great seeing Robert Picardo, right? Because if people don't know who he is, and most Star Trek fans do, he was the
doctor.
He was the doctor on Voyager. He was the emergency medical hologram, but he's so much more than that. And it was nice seeing him on here, because it was one thing that Robert Picardo does well, probably better than any actor, is he has a great elitism about him. You know, when he said that humans, the hillbillies of the galaxy, that's so Robert Picardo, right?
That was a great line. I'm glad you brought that up.
But I thought it was a nice scene where Alara's like, you know, am I making the right choice? Did I do the right thing? And there's just the whole kind of parents is like, come back home. We'll set you up. It's always okay to come home. You can finish up your education. It's okay. You know, everything will be fine. And she's like, that's not what this is all about. So what did you guys think of that scene? Haley, what did you think of that scene with her parents?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That kind of felt like I was back home, and I'm like, no, you know, like, yeah, that I'm an adult. Stop treating me like I'm your, you know, 10-year-old kid. I'm your adult kid. Yeah. That's what it felt like for me. But it was great.
We also had Molly Hagan on there, and she's known to Star Trek fans on Deep Space Nine. She played a Vorta. Mm-hmm. And they were the Vorta were the servants.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. She was the Vorta were the servants of the Dominion of the. Oh gosh, help me out here, Haley. What are the name? I mean, they had the shapeshifters.
The founders.
Thank you. Sorry, Deep Space Nine fans. I'm catching up. So you know, forgive me here. But yeah, they were the servants of the founders, and they doled out the Ketracel White to the Jem'Hadar to keep them in line. So they were kind of like the middlemen. But it was nice seeing. It was just nice to see familiar faces again. You know, back on the Orville that are Star Trek.
Can I just give a little shout out to Molly Hagan? First of all, I follow her on Twitter and also Robert Picardo. It was great because they had taken pictures of their costumes with their makeup, and they were like, finally we can release these pictures because the episode came out. But I want to give a shout out to Molly Hagan for Herman's head. Just
oh,
Herman's
that's
head
right. Now? Yeah, you mentioned that on our Facebook page. Yeah.
She was great in that one. She played, I think, Love or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, funny show. We already touched a little bit about Seth MacFarlane really kind of maturing into the captain. And I agree, Kevin. I think that he's doing so much better of a role in terms of being this overarching, influence over the cast, you know, maybe even like behind the scenes, because he's not the jokester anymore. You know, he does deliver some good comedy lines, but he is that scene where he was counseling Alara about what to do. Everything that he said felt like something that a captain would say, you know, it's like, it's my fault. No, it's not. It's something that was out of your control. You're just internalizing it as your fault. That's a very Picard-esque kind of thing to say. So, yeah.
Yeah, and also to the scene at the end where everyone's in the room and he's asking her, do you remember this, and kind of wrapping up what's going on. And by the way, did you notice how he kind of had his uniform unzipped? It's kind of like the casual thing.
A couple people
know,
did, yeah.
Yeah, except for Bordas, of course. Well, he's like, I'm feeling self-conscious, may I leave? But it kind of reminded me of the captain's jacket that Picard had from like season 4 and up or 5 and up, you know, when he had it open a little bit. It reminded me of that. That's another thing I love about those uniforms.
I know, they're kind of like it's like what we're doing in the officer's lounge. We unzip, we hang,
yep.
Right? And then talk about the Orville. So one last thing I wanted to talk about, because we're seeing a lot more of these characters getting peppered into these first 10 episodes. We're seeing a little bit of a possibility of a bigger crew. You know, we saw Chief Engineer Newton played a much bigger role in this episode. And he was awesome. That's Larry Joe Campbell's character. We've seen Nurse Park now in a couple episodes, and he's done some really interesting things. Well, he got shot in this episode and killed, but that was a simulator. But also, in Cupid's Dagger, he's the one who figured out how to get around the hormones, the pheromones that Darulia was kicking around. So another secondary character. And then you have Yaphet, of course. He's there, voiced by Norm Macdonald. And you have Clyden, who's Bordas's partner, So, and then you have the two kids, you have Marcus and Ty. So it's kind of like, on Deep Space Nine, I actually think that the secondary characters are just as fascinating as the primary characters.
I'm glad you brought this up real quick. And Haley, I wanted to ask you about this because obviously this is Discoville and we talk about Star Trek Discovery as well. This is the one thing I really love about Orville as they're highlighting these secondary characters more. Well, we're not really getting that with Star Trek Discovery. When you see these cool other looking people on the bridge, that kind of androidy looking woman and the other girl and a couple other people, you're not getting them highlighted yet. And I really think that Orville is doing a great job of doing that. And Haley, I wanted to ask you about that. If you felt the same way.
Yeah. I was going to say that the Orville, when Norm's mentioning about like the secondary characters, it felt kind of, I guess, like Deep Space Nine, but I was thinking more Lower Decks kind of episode.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. You know? We all love Lower Decks, right?
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I'm hoping that we get more story of those secondary characters on Discovery. And I think, all the series kind of tend to evolve around and tell stories around the main cast, which is how it is. We kind of all want that main group and then we want those secondary characters here and there. But yeah, I'm hoping that we get more of those stories in, just because they are really fascinating. You look at them and you think, well, what happened? And I can't remember her name, but she's got the kind of, it's almost like the Borg thing, like Seven of Nine has, it comes around her eye and she's, eye's damaged. Like, what happened to her? What caused that? And I think the other one that you're talking about with, like, I know several podcasts, they call her like Robot Head. She's, now the phrase escapes me, but she's human. She actually is human, but she's not android, but she's kind of, she purposely chose, or something obviously happened that she had to have those mechanical parts put into her. So yeah, I definitely want more of that. For sure.
I mean, that's what I think is really cool about the Orville, is that they're building, they're world building, I think, in a completely different way than Discovery's. Not so much world building as it is kind of extending the world that's already been created for them, because mm-hmm. they're in the past, they're in that prequel kind of like setting. So there is so much of this episode that I loved. And one last thing, how did you guys feel about Dr. Claire, Penny Johnson-Gerald, when she just went on a complete mirror mind bender in that performance in the brig? I thought that was amazing.
Someone get me some pizza.
Right. But that, I didn't know that she had that kind of a laugh. That laugh really put me on edge.
Yeah.
That was very maniacal.
Yeah. That was a little scary. Not quite as scary as the clown, but that was a little scary.
Well,
yeah, she was great. She really chewed that scene up.
Yeah. Like big time. And, gosh, I would love to keep on going more and more and more. So if there's something on either Discovery or the Orville that we haven't covered on either of our recaps here, let us know. Make sure that you get to our contact information that Kevin talked about early in the beginning of the show. Write us an email. Send us a message. We tweet these out, so make sure that you tweet us back. And let us know if there's something that specifically stood out to you. Because as we're closing down this part of the Orville, it is time in Discoville to
activate the Omega 13.
So it's time to make that very difficult Omega 13 pick, where the Omega 13 comes from Galaxy Quest, as everyone knows that's watched Galaxy Quest. And if you don't know, there's an alien device that either gives you 13 seconds to either rearrange matter or to try and correct a mistake. So on the Orville, since it's the only episode that we watched live this week, is there something, Haley, let's start with you, that you chose to either want to rewatch or rewrite?
So I could rewatch when Lieutenant Malloy and Lamar and then eventually Bordas show up with the period clothing and the dueling pistols and the white wigs. That was really funny. I could watch that over and over. And I loved it when Bordas showed up and he's like, am I early?
That's one of those moments like in the Orville where the comedy breaks the tension, like in a perfect way, right?
What scene were they going to do? Was it going to be a three-way duel? Was Bordas going to come in and duel whoever the winner was?
That was my thought. And it kind of reminded me a lot of in DS9 when Bashir and O'Brien go on their little historical reenactments in the Holosuite all the time. And you always wanted to be like, man, I really wish I could have known like everything that they were doing. Watch Be the Fly on the Holosuite wall, watching it. Yeah, I thought that was great.
How about you, Kev?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Please tell me you got this too. I would relive the scene towards the end where Alara is doing her best Ellen Ripley towards the end of the episode. When you remember in Aliens where she's going to go back for Newt and she's putting the guns together and you have that intense music and she's walking through the hallways and Alara goes and picks the rifle off the wall and the lights are down and it totally had that Aliens vibe going on and she was totally channeling Ellen Ripley and I could watch that over and over again, including the music. The music was spot on. Did you by any chance catch that comparison, any of you guys?
I was waiting for her to do that, and it would have been neat if Malloy wasn't eaten at the spider by that time. He was getting chased by the spider, and then all of a sudden Helix gets knocked down and then she showed up and she like points the phaser rifle at the giant spider. She goes, "Get away from him, you bitch." That would have been perfect.
Or the Orville computer comes on. You have 5 minutes to get away for a minimum safe.
Then all of a sudden, like Isaac comes in and you know, he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that landing pad was a little shaky." So yeah, totally play on Aliens, and maybe that scene's trademarked, I don't know. And sorry, Kyle, leave the word in. We'll work for an explicit ratings on iTunes later. For me, again, I thought that Ed's maturity in this, or at least Seth's maturity that he's bringing to Ed, was fantastic. I think that the best line for me that he's delivered so far is when Alara is standing there and she's just completely shaken and she wants to leave her position. And she says, "I was afraid." And he goes, "People seem to think that being brave means not being afraid. The way I see it, if you're not afraid, there's nothing to be brave about." I thought that was so captain-esque, and the way he delivered it was on par with any captain that I've seen on any of the Trek series, or any captain that I've seen. Like, I could see a Malcolm Reynolds saying that to I keep thinking Jewel State, but it's not Jewel State. You know who I'm talking about. Kaylee.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kaylee. On Firefly.
Yeah.
You know, if Kaylee was attacked by a Reaver and she needed to fix the engine, that's something that I think Mal would say to Kaylee. So great maturity level that he's showing on the show. I think that, we only have 2 episodes left.
If you don't mind, Norman, I have a question for Haley. I wanted to run this by her. Haley, now I know you're new to Orville. You have not seen all the episodes yet. And I got to ask you this question, because one thing that I have discovered with Orville fans, especially ones that have come on late, I'm going to throw a shout out to my friend Matthew Clifton, who kind of dove into it.
Finally.
And he ended up buying it for $10 on iTunes. He loves it. He is hooked. And I keep talking to people that are watching it. They're saying, "Man, this thing is turning out better than I thought it would be. It's exceeded our expectations." And, you know, it's nice that we're going to be getting a second season. It's been renewed. Now, Haley, I know you didn't jump in on it right away. Why not? And also, how do you feel about it now that you have watched a few episodes?
So I actually watched the first episode probably, I think, within the same week that it came out. And I had to wait for Hulu to get it, which wasn't very long. So, and I was like, okay. And again, I kind of don't jump into anything with like, woohoo, you know, like some people have with Discovery. So I'm probably going to go back based on this episode, and I'll probably go back and watch. So like I said, I know 1 and 2, and then I kind of stopped. From there, and just kind of see where it progresses and see how I feel about it afterwards. I'm always, you know, one for give it a try. If you don't like it, you don't like it, and everything's not for everybody, you know. So, but I'm interested to see where it goes. We'll see what happens.
Cool. Well, Kev, as we wrap up the show here, there's one thing I would like to do. I would love for you to be able to open up Subspace Signals. Now, there isn't a lot right now, support-wise, for the Orville, unfortunately, like officially. So I'd love for you.
Yet. So, we hope yet.
I know. And hopefully, because the second season's been greenlit and they're going to go into production, there's going to be a little bit more of that later on. But there is something cool that I'd love for you to tell the listeners about that's official that's coming out.
Yeah, first of all, I want to, if anyone official from the Orville is listening, please start working on an Orville convention, please. We really want to do this and start getting some official costumes and props out there because we want these now. But if you do want something soon, on Amazon, there is a book called The World of Orville. From Amazon, four-time Emmy Award winner Seth MacFarlane creates a new sci-fi dramatic universe on the Fox network of his new show. And this is the description of this book here. The Orville, Seth MacFarlane plays Captain Ed Mercer, an officer in the Planetary Union in the 25th century who gathers a crew from the farthest reaches of the galaxy, his ex-wife included, to man the exploratory vessel, the Orville, and patrol the mysteries of deep space filled with alien species, exotic worlds, futuristic technology, and awe-inspiring spaceships. This lavish companion to the Orville takes you behind the scenes through concept art, on-set photography, and technical schematics to explore the show's production design, costumes, makeup, prosthetics, and visual effects. This is the ultimate guide to the new spacefaring epic adventure. And it is currently on pre-order right now for Amazon. And about the author, Jeff Bond. He's the author of Dance Macabre, 25 Years of Danny Elfman and Tim Burton, ooh, and the music of Star Trek. He was the executive editor of Geek Magazine and senior editor at CFQ, the revival of Cine Fantasque magazine from 2003-2006. He covers film, music, and other subjects for The Hollywood Reporter and has written hundreds of movie and television soundtrack liner notes and booklets. The book is to hardcover, 160 pages.
Wow, that's a big book.
And it said, yeah, the publisher's Titan Books, and there's a date of January 16th, 2018. Oh. So I don't know if that's when it will eventually become available. But yeah, and right now it's on Prime. If you have Prime, it's at $27.46. So it is ready to pre-order. So make sure you check that out. I'm really curious about the schematics, mm-hmm, and production value and stuff like this. So this is going to be the first official, I guess, Orville item that you can get. And we want more.
I might have to order two of these books, one to keep and one to completely just dog ear and just,
oh, you know, I know, just write just, yeah, in and stuff. Haley, if you could grab something official for Orville prop wise, what would you get?
Oh, I'd probably do a uniform. I like that the zippers are straight and don't have that kind of angle like the Discovery ones do, right, that really just throws me off every time I see them.
Which color are you looking at?
I would probably do a blue. I'm a blue. Yeah. Yeah.
Command blue. Yeah, cool. I really like that security red. I think that's nice too. Yeah.
I like the doctor's smock. It's one of my favorite, yeah, uniforms. I think it's so neat.
Is green doctor and science? Because I noticed there was an officer on the bridge with green as well.
I believe it's sciences, not just medical.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
You have blue is command, and then, well, purple is the admiralty. And then you have red is security and tactical, and then you have operations is orange.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, sadly, we have to wrap things up because we're having such a good time. Haley, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to at least hear what you're doing in the neck of the podcasting woods, because you have been on a show or two recently and you have, yeah, your own podcast set up. So where can our listeners hear you when you're not on this show having so much fun with us?
So recently, a few weeks ago, I was on Discovering Trek from our friends, the Trek Geeks. I did their episode Leafy with them, which was really great. That was super fun. And then I recently was over on the Nerd Party network on SETI Alpha 3 talking about Into the Forest I Go with the gentleman over on that one.
Yeah, I just did a show with them. They're fun.
They are fun. And yeah, it was great. They were the first podcast that I ever listened to back when they were on the other network. And mm-hmm, so that was super fun. It was great.
Yeah, great. And you know what? congratulations to you that you've jumped into this whole podcasting craziness, because it's a lot of fun. But I hope we get a chance to have you back here on the show.
Yeah, I'd appreciate it. And thanks for having me.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. So this isn't the only show that we're talking about here on the Fandom Podcast Network. We love talking about Star Trek Discovery and the Orville here on Discoville. But Kev, we have a lot of shows that are coming up right now, and it's going to be a busy time of year. So when you're doing your Christmas shopping, you're out there traveling for Thanksgiving, make sure that you tune into the Fandom Podcast Network for these great shows.
Oh, we got some great stuff going on, especially the other show that you and I co-host, Norman. We're big Highlander fans, so we co-host Blood of Kings, our Highlander podcast, on the Fandom Podcast Network. And recently, we had returned from Los Angeles celebrating the Highlander TV show 25th anniversary gathering. And we've recently released episodes 56, part 1 and 2. One was our convention gathering wrap-up. And as of today, of our recording here on November 20th, we released the fan interviews that we took there. And then coming up, we also have the panel that we did with Highlander and social media. And then we the fourth one that we're going to release is our celebrity interviews that we did at the Highlander convention. So we're really, really excited about that. The other show that we have, our flagship show, Culture Clash, that I co-host with our other Fandom Podcast Network co-founder, Mr. Kyle Wagner. That's our weekly, kind of our weekly fandom news show. And recently we've discussed the Star Wars trilogy announcement and the Star Wars TV show. Rebels, we talked about the Disney Fox rumors and the death of the dark universe. And of course, the recent Justice League movie and Punisher on Netflix. And we did a bunch of other cool things. So also on Couch Potato Theater, we have those movies that you just don't get off the couch for, that we're really excited about, that you may have sitting on the shelf there, but you just sit there and you watch them. Recently covered Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, and also Doomsday. Also, we have Time Warp, which is our way of celebrating old fandoms that we love and that we like to revisit. And recently we did, recently about to do part 4 of 1987, the movie. Those are all 30 years old. And recently celebrated the 25th anniversary Halloween special with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So make sure you check that out. We also have an Alfred Hitchcock podcast called Good Evening with host Tom, Brandon, and Chris, talking about everything of the master of suspense, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock. And last but not least, we have The End Zone, our weekly NFL show where we look back on the last week and look forward. And we also give some really fun and mediocre fantasy football advice.
It's better than mediocre. It's slightly better than mediocre. But you guys do a great job on that. That's a lot of programming there on the Fandom Podcast Network. So again, if you're out and about doing your holiday thing, traveling, going on an airplane, visiting family, visiting friends, just trying to find a way to, you know, make that time go by a little bit faster. Make sure you keep us in mind with all these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. So, Haley, thank you for coming on. Kev, always a pleasure to record with you. On behalf of my fellow Shuttle podcasters, Kevin and Haley, thanks everyone for listening, and join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Discoville. Hailing frequencies are now closed.